BJJ Matt Times.
The following conversation is with Chance Snyder, a friend, an MMA fighter, and a brown belt training out of North Coast Jiu-Jitsu.
BJJ Matt Times.
53 times or so, and I still can't do this right.
It's okay.
It happens. Dude, so, hey, by the way, you look freaking solid out there on Saturday
Thank
night.
You, man.
I was watching that, and I was like, as soon as I saw those hands come out, I was like, wow.
So you got to watch?
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Yeah. I was watching on pay-per-view, and I was talking with Hoda. I was like, Hoda was on his way down to check it out. And he's like, hey, are you down there? I was like, no, I'm not down there, but I'm watching it on the pay-per-view. Mm. And we were watching like some of the prelims. They had a couple kids matches before that. And then we knew that you were coming up third and we were watching and seeing you step out there. And this is, dude, so we couldn't quite hear what was going on in the background, but sounded like you walked out to Prince.
Of course I walked
dude,
out to
I
Prince.
Knew it,
yeah,
I knew it.
Yeah. It was 1999. Really important to me that it worked out that way. Originally this fight was supposed to be in August, if I'm not mistaken, so a few months back. And I was really into, for whatever reason, like nostalgic attitude era WWF. So I was rewatching all this stuff from my childhood. And I had the bright idea, like, let's do the Stone Cold theme song as an entrance, because the drop is so like iconic. It immediately like brings the attention in and all that. And I'd play it in my car just as like a gag or whatever, running down the road and thinking about like walking out to it and just thinking like, I don't even take myself this seriously. Like, how could I really imagine someone to not take this as like satire or something like that? So I texted the promoter real fast. Can I switch it to 1999? And he had told me that the night before was the cutoff for the DJ. So he wasn't sure if he'd be able to do it. So I didn't know what was coming on until I started walking out. And once it did, it was like, it felt right. It felt like better to put me in the right mind state than something so aggressive and hard. Because I'm not really that aggressive or hard.
Dude, when that started, when I could hear it in the background, I was like, oh, that's Chance. That's 100% Chance. That's him all the way.
Yeah.
And I was laughing. I was like, is that Prince? Oh yeah, that's got to be him, dude. I could have swore I heard you blasting it when you were pulling up.
I was,
yeah,
I was indeed.
That's how I knew. I was like, oh yeah, that's got to be Chance
Cruising
by.
It's not a gimmick. It's my real life.
It's who you are.
Yeah,
it's
exactly
who you are. So, dude, when we were watching the pay per view and we were sitting down, like your opponent came out first, and I'm watching him walk out, and then I see you start to come out. Dude, right now, instantly my body started going into panic mode and the anxiety and everything else. And I'm like, I've never been so invested in a fight in my entire life. Not even my own matches, like my own jiu-jitsu matches. Mm-hmm. I have never been that invested in watching that. And I'm sitting here like butterflies in my stomach, watching, like about to have a panic attack or an anxiety attack right there on the freaking couch. What was it like for you stepping in there?
I was pretty calm by that point. I had the feeling that it was too late to be nervous. It was too late to have any doubt or whatever, because I was going in there. Regardless, I showed up to make weight. I was ready to go. The opponent didn't pull out. So you don't really have a choice. You're either just going to go in there and freeze and catch a butt whooping, or you're going to have to do the butt whooping. So you don't really have it. I'm sure most people do feel very nervous, but I felt very present and just prepared for the situation.
It seemed like leading up to this, there was a lot of preparation going into this. Cause like, I mean, I'd see you at the gym and I'd see you doing rounds over there. I know it's like your training kind of changed a bit. And so with your training leading up to this, like how long did you have to prep or camp to go to do this?
Yeah. So, like I said, the original fight was going to be in August. So I started a few months before the original August date. That got canceled 2 or 3 days before it was going to pop off. They tried to find me a replacement. I wasn't kind of feeling the matchup. It was a bit of a mismatch, and I didn't want to be a part of that kind of situation. So I kind of came off the gas a little bit for probably a week and a half or so, and figured that there would be another opportunity coming, because the matchmaker that I was speaking with, we developed some kind of rapport, and seemed like he would try to get me another one pretty fast. So I stopped for probably 2 weeks, just kind of BSing around the mats, training for fun. And then a little bit after that, we got started with the schedule that I was running for most of what you can call the camp, which is Monday and Tuesday at North Coast. Gi on Monday, kind of, sort of, when I kind of felt like it. Closer to the fight, I took off the gi completely, just because I didn't see that it was necessary for MMA preparation. And then Tuesday, no gi, mostly just wrestling, training. Wednesday, off. Thursday, a hard sparring day at Excel with Javon and RJ, who I met through the legendary North Coast Open mat. Just the best vibes in the world. Friday, back at North Coast. Saturday, kind of like a light sparring, but only stand up, at 760. So Excel and 760, a few limited members of those camps helped me out quite a bit for this fight.
That's awesome, man, because you're getting around to a couple other gyms in the community out here in the North County area. Mm-hmm. When with your striking piece, I mean, how long have you been striking? Because I know we used to kind of mess around a few years ago when mm-hmm. we were doing like the Muay Thai class. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you'd always pop me in the head and I'd be like, man, I can't keep up with Chance. He's just so fast.
That doesn't sound right.
It's 100% accurate. You proved it on Saturday. I saw those hands. I saw the hands. We all saw the hands. Mm-hmm. You were moving and striking. Very accurate. Very on point. In and out. Even at one point where it looked like your opponent tried to shoot in on you at one point, and you did an uppercut and caught him and backed him back mm-hmm. off. It looked like that. It was hard to see from the angle of the camera, but it even looked there. Your striking looked amazing. I thought that that's what one of the things that caught me. Like, I knew your jiu-jitsu was good. Mm-hmm. I knew your wrestling was good, and I knew you could turn out and handle your business there. But I'd never really seen you strike.
Yeah, no one has.
With intent like that. And it caught me by surprise. I was like, wow. I was like, Chance has some hands. He can throw down. Yeah. And I thought that was amazing. And so you worked on that a lot with other jiu-jitsu community members.
Yeah. For the preparation, like specifically for this camp, when I left North Coast around the pandemic, Jake likes to propagate the idea that this was for my now wife. But I hadn't actually met her yet. I was training with one of my buddies who's in my corner for that fight, Andrew Saucedo, up in Riverside. They call it Carlson Gracie Riverside, but it's really an MMA gym, more or less. So when I was training over there, I got into their jiu-jitsu team pretty fast, kind of just assimilated into it. But a lot of their lower belts were cross-training the MMA program when I was living in Menifee. So that was more or less the focus of training in the middle of the pandemic before I moved eventually to San Jose, got a full-time job and started taking care of my lady and having an apartment, kind of being a grown-up. The training was a lot more limited, but the only training I was really doing up there was kickboxing. That's what... Jake, again, likes to propagate the idea that I was fat and just doing absolutely nothing. But I was basically exclusively kickboxing for just under a year that I was up there.
You're up there getting your chonk on? Your mega chonk?
My chonk?
Chonk.
Oh, yes.
Your chonk. It's like a mix between chunky and not chunky.
Yeah.
It's like a chonk.
If you watch Saturday, I still exhibit many of those attributes, you know?
Okay, so like you're talking about like your transition over there, and then during COVID, going mm-hmm. back to strict. So what, like, at what point were you thinking, like, I want to do an MMA fight? Like, I want to go in there and do that. How did that come about?
Yeah, I found jiu-jitsu through MMA, like a lot of people did. When I started watching MMA, I was very, very little, and it was not a huge should say, my parents were not huge fans of me even watching it, let alone watching it themselves or participating. Our household was kind of a boxing household because of our Mexican heritage. It was kind of just a family event type of thing. Before I started jiu-jitsu, the kind of intent was to get good enough to cross over and fight, essentially. I didn't really know the timetable on that. I thought it would be pretty fast. At Blue Belt, I was already asking Jake for fights. He told me wait till brown or purple. I can't remember which. And then, you know, I fell so in love with jiu-jitsu that it took more of my time and attention. I think it's very, like, sophisticated, especially the highest level of competition in the adult bracket. So it really requires time and attention to, like, refine competitive jiu-jitsu. So that was my focus for a large amount of the time.
And with your competitive jiu-jitsu, so I've primarily seen you in no-gi in competitive jiu-jitsu. And I mean, you're moving out there. Like your stamina, your cardio, your pace that you're able to keep up out there is amazing. And not only when we talk about like the mind of jiu-jitsu and the thought process of working through those jiu-jitsu moves, that, but like something I was thinking about is like the stamina in those no-gi jiu-jitsu competitions that you were doing and the speed at which you're moving. Is that similar to what you're doing in MMA, the speed or the cardio piece, or how do you build that cardio for what you walked into on Saturday?
It's an interesting question. I don't claim to be like an expert mixed martial artist or anything like that.
But what works for you?
Really, I'm kind of, I think, an anomaly if you think that I have decent cardio, because I train zero cardio, really. I train really sports specific for everything that I do. If I have any amount of energy left, I in my brain think that it's better to put into the actual like skill development than any other external attribute. I could see that changing though as I get older. A lot more recovery and sort of supplemental work is probably going to be necessary, because I'm still not very old now, but I'm slowing down a little bit. I could feel the miles, so
It ticks away at you every year, just a little bit.
Yes, sir. I'm feeling it. But yeah, cardio-wise, I really think for a fight, it's really just about sparring. There's not a supplement that I think will actually effectively get you to be calm enough, to be efficient enough in those chaotic scenarios besides sparring. So I think I don't really have awesome cardio. I just think that I've developed the ability to pace myself in competition and to be as efficient through the techniques that I choose as possible to not get gassed out.
In like with your striking, and you're out there, like how do you modulate your pace, like in your mind? Let's say you're like training and you're thinking about your pace, and do you go, hey, like I'm breathing hard, and so I'm going to back off a little bit, or do you push it? Do you modulate anything in training, or what do you think about when you're out there pushing the pace in training?
Yeah, in training for striking, I'm training with people who are significantly better. The skill gap is significant. So most of the time when I'm training striking, and especially MMA sparring when it's feet to floor, it's very there's almost a survival element to it. So the adrenaline dump you get to experience training through an adrenaline dump, the fear of the actual pain, you could call it, that comes back at you. I don't think you can sprint or do push-ups that are going to simulate that level of a push. So when I'm sparring with people who are significantly better than me, I think that getting to the red line and just knowing that you can sustain it for X amount of time allows you to, when you're faced with somebody whose skill differential isn't as significant, it's not as scary to think about reaching the red line.
In with the red line, so the red line in training compared to the red line on Saturday night, how fast, like I know for me specifically, and I'm speaking from jiu-jitsu, like when I'm training for a jiu-jitsu competition, leading up, I redlined, but it's like two or three rounds down the road when I start usually getting to that higher point of my cardio where my heart rate isn't getting back down. But when I get to competition, it's like a minute in, minute and a half in. Mm-hmm. How does that relate to when you're striking and then you step in that cage? And what's it feel like as far as hitting that red line and your anxiety, or I shouldn't say anxiety, but like your adrenaline and everything else when you step in there? Is it different?
It's a different sport. It's a different rule set, and there's all different parameters surrounding it. So I was thinking about this earlier this weekend. I didn't red line at all on Saturday, and it's because I've had several jiu-jitsu tournaments where you have three matches, let's say, in a small bracket, and I can go hard for the first one, the second one I'll hit a red line, and then the finals match I'll try to hit another red line, and I just don't have the explosiveness from the first initial burst that I do now, that I have now in my reserves, I should say. That's a scary feeling. Even just in a grappling context, to be so exhausted that you feel like you can't adequately defend yourself. So that was something I was trying to actively avoid, is passing the red line on Saturday. Number two, it was 2 minute rounds with a minute of recovery, as compared to right now, or I guess I should say last time I competed at Purple Belt, which is you're probably going to have three or four matches that day at 6 minutes apiece with no break in between. And no resets to the feet. So those criteria definitely change what you're actually putting out from yourself, like the day of the competition, the warm-up, and the like performance itself.
And it seems like you had good preparation going into this. Mm-hmm. So what surprised you when you were in there?
I was surprised to have been taken down. I was really disappointed with myself. I got taken down twice. I put in a lot of work wrestling in no-gi contexts and on the wall, like as though a clinch had already been initiated, and some work on, let's say, like a pad flow. We'll throw a hand combination into a takedown or into a clinch. None of that really happened. On Saturday, there were kind of shots from a striking distance that I wasn't expecting. And it's a much different look than a no-gi opponent trying to take a shot on you with like wrestling grips or judo grips. The range is much different, and the posture that I was standing in for a striking exchange is much different than I would be able to defend that equivalent double leg in just the no-gi context. So there's so much to think about in that situation that it turns into a completely different sport. So that's why you saw a guy who really couldn't wrestle with me if we were just going no-gi, like a wrestling freestyle rule set or something like that, being able to take me down and hold me down for a few seconds.
So, and when you talk about like the difference in the way it looks, is that because like when you're striking, you're more upright, I guess you can say upright, hands up, versus when we're in jiu-jitsu, we're kind of more bent over, ready to sprawl back immediately, waiting for that shot, waiting for the thing. Is that kind of like the difference that right. you're looking at in there?
Posture's huge. The second thing is in wrestling, not that I'm a wrestling expert either, but in wrestling, generally, it's a faux pas to shoot from the outside without any setup. Generally, someone's going to have some sort of grip system that they go to in a hand fight that's going to initiate their shot. In a striking context where you're like a fully extended right hand and then some away from your opponent, you're under the impression that you'll be able to see that shot from a mile away. And most people can. I kind of did see the shot, but my defenses were just a little bit late because of the posture, like we spoke about, the lack of grips. There's a ton of variables that make it just so much different.
So you're in there, you're mm-hmm. watching what your opponent's doing, and you're seeing how you're reacting to it. So what'd you learn about yourself, like in there? I mean, from the physical standpoint and the mental standpoint, I'm kind of wondering, like, what'd you learn about yourself?
That's a great question. I had a bunch of people telling me, not necessarily from like our close circle, but from, I should say, acquaintances, I guess you can say, sort of reinforce this idea that jiu-jitsu experience competing is completely different than an MMA fight. And I think it is. It obviously is a much more violent and like pressure-filled scenario. But the amount of time that I've spent preparing myself mentally and physically for competition, I was very pleased with how that crossed over. Because I think most of the fights are won or lost in the last, you know, 15 to 20 minutes before you guys are like walking out there. There's some mental choice that you have to make to accept even like the worst outcome possible in order to really be free enough to do what you came there to do.
And so your mindset 15, 20 minutes before, like what was it?
I don't know. It'll probably sound like real hokey. You know, those Instagram posts where, you know, some white belt who just competed at Naga tells you that they're a gladiator or whatever. But it's that there's a few mantras that run through your head. If you have done the preparation to sort of meditate on things that are going to keep you focused in that time, the preparation mentally kind of kicks in during the most pressure-filled seconds of getting ready. So I think the best thing I could say as like a tip maybe just to... Sorry, buddy.
It's all good,
just brother. just a sort of a tool to get you ready and in the zone is during your camp, during whatever preparation you're going to do, find some kind of mantra or some sort of meditative practice to keep you focused and ready to block out the outside stuff. For me, I was telling myself that I was ready to perform and I was grateful to be there and that I was ready to die if I had to. That's the three things. Probably sounds a little cringe or whatever in hindsight, but that's just the kind of space you need to get into, I think. I need to get into to perform at that particular sport. I don't think it's the same in a jiu-jitsu context. I don't think you have to be ready to be Russell Crowe and Gladiator all the time, but I think for MMA it's helpful.
I think like when you're talking about preparation too, like were you there when Victor Hugo did the seminar?
I didn't get to be there, no.
So when Victor Hugo was there, someone, and I think it was Victor Hugo who said this, I could be wrong, but somebody had asked him about preparation and competition, and I think he was the one that said, "Hey, you've done the time on the mats, you've paid the fees, now you just got to just show up,
yeah,
and that's it. That everything else is done." And I thought that was, like a good mindset too. Like, hey, you're already here, mm-hmm. Now you just got to go in and do, you just got to go in and do what you're gonna do.
Yeah.
And then as far as like people talk, like the people say like you know, they go out and they're like, you know, I'm ready to die, and like, well, I think that's the mindset you have to have a lot of times, because if I heard it once years ago and I don't remember who said it, and I mean, I'm talking like early 20s, like I was still in the Marine Corps at the time, mm-hmm. And somebody had said something along the lines, you're already dead.
Yeah.
And that's the way you got to think of it.
Yes, sir.
And when you walk out of there, because what that does is it frees your mind of all the things like, oh man, well, what if this happens? Mm-hmm. That happens? Well, what if it doesn't? What if it doesn't? If you're already dead, what does it matter?
Exactly. And I think.
Yeah. You just go. Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I think that ties in with the Prince 1999 walkout. It's very apocalyptic. If you listen to the lyrics, it's basically that we're all already about to die, so you might as well full send it. And it does give you a freedom to perform. You don't have to take it so seriously. If you know an ass whooping's already waiting for you and you didn't do the preparation to be able to face it, then you're already you already screwed the pooch at that point, you know? With all of those sort of like themes and mantras playing in my head, I came to like a really peaceful place knowing that I've worked so hard for this for so long, and I've been denied an opportunity to be able to perform. And I'm not really like a fighter, I guess I would call myself. I like to think of myself as a martial artist. So I've developed all of this time and all of this philosophy behind the choices that I make when I'm competing. And now I have an opportunity to perform and to show the art that I've put all this work into. And that's what made me feel like happy in that moment and performative, as opposed to anxious and tentative and worried about, you know, what could have been. And if my final form of my martial art for November 18th wasn't enough, it feels as though like that like video game character of moves that you selected, that you made, that you spent all that time, it feels like that guy died. And that's how jiu-jitsu matches have felt for me in the past. Like the game that you constructed, the avatar that you made as a martial artist wasn't capable of passing this test. If there was no ref here, that guy would have choked you to death. Like you're a bum. You have to throw that, wrap it up away, and build something completely new, and then go test it again and hope that it's dope. If you're me, like, I don't really want my guy to just be like enough to pass the test. It needs to be a little bit more expressive. I think that's the art in my martial arts. It's kind of, it has to be an expression of myself.
Yeah. And if you had like, dude, if you had a magic wand and your art and how you express yourself, I mean, what would that look like? How would that be? Like, you would just walk in and decimate your opponents every time? I mean, what's your ultimate expression of that?
No, I mean, you would want that just from a, not an ego way, but from a physical health and safety and the reassurance of like the people that are supporting you. You'd want to go out there and throw one punch and it be done. I got pretty close to what I would say was like a decent performance for myself on Saturday for my debut. It definitely wasn't perfect. I saw a lot that that could have been improved on, but I would say that I was at least happy that I could win a decision that showed that it wasn't like a fluke. There wasn't some sort of lucky takedown or a punch that I caught him with. There was more or less dominance, and he didn't have any room to really mount an offense. So that was nice. I would have preferred to be able to finish him. There was a lot that I could have done that I just didn't. I think that's mostly inexperience.
Do you ever feel like, like every time you get done with a match, jiu-jitsu, now MMA, and you get through and you just like the whole thing just replays in your mind over and over. Like, I wish I'd have done that. I got caught here. If I'd have done this, I'd have made this little move here. And like, I do a lot of reflection on not only my training rounds, but like the competition rounds too. And I do a lot of reflection on that and think like, how do I improve? Because I want to be able to go out. Like for me, I like to be able to go out and go, okay, I'm going to go out and do this. And when I get done, I don't want to feel like I'm completely dead and died. I want to feel like I executed the plan exactly how I was going to. And if it wasn't going like I wanted it to, I had an alternative move to be able to come out on top. Like,
right.
I saw what was coming every time something changed.
Right.
That's like my idea out there. I think that's maybe why I spend a lot of time watching YouTube videos and flying arm bars and all that fun stuff. I don't know.
A lot of people kind of look down almost or have like a stigma about watching themselves. But especially in competition, I think that's been something that has helped me quite a bit. It seems like on the outside, like, oh, maybe this guy is just kind of full of himself or whatever. But there's so much that you don't pick up on when you're not able to actually see what's going on. from the outside looking in, and to be able to watch yourself and be self-critical is a huge tool that I've been able to use quite a bit. Any amount of like little film, just checking tiny little details of something that I wouldn't have been able to see from the perspective of actually doing it.
Have you had a chance to rewatch Saturday's match yet?
Yeah.
Anything that you took away from it, good, bad, indifferent? What's something that you looked at there and you're like, hey, I need to improve upon this?
There was a lot, but it was also my first time, mm-hmm. so I expected there to be like glaring, not necessarily holes, but just things that could be really sharpened that were kind of crude in areas. I could have stopped both of those takedowns with the proper responses, and I was doing things that weren't necessarily wrong. They're just not best practices in that scenario. Another thing, I don't think I threw a single punch to the body in the entire fight. That's kind of something that I pride myself on in sparring. In kickboxing, I do a lot of body work, especially on an opponent like Saturdays, who's a bit taller than me, a longer reach, kind of skinny, you know, no offense, brother, but, you know, you got to rip the body. And I threw 1,000 one-twos that he was high guarding, and there's no reason that you shouldn't be able to follow up to something else on top of that, as opposed to sort of spamming one tactic, even though it was pretty successful.
You've rewatched the video and you know what you want to improve upon. Mm-hmm. So what went well for you that should be a part of your game?
The things that I knew were going to work well for me, my footwork, my feints, my straight punches. I never thought I was fast. I had basketball coaches tell me that I was the slowest person on earth for like 4 years when I was a kid. And I think that messed me up like psychologically with my athleticism.
Yeah.
But I think I did a decent job with my hand speed, as opposed to feeling the tension of the moment and trying to overswing and try to really hurt the guy. I kind of had the composure knowing if I put enough of these on a low volume but a high pace, I'm gonna hurt him eventually and he won't be able to throw back. And that's kind of what played out, I think.
Like there was there a significant reach difference between the two of you?
Yeah,
it looked like there was, but I didn't really see the stats. I remember there was a stat up there, Chance 5'8".
That's
I was
correct.
Like, yeah, I was like, hey man, I'm proud.
That is now canon and lore.
Yes.
If you speak to me, just know that I am 5'8". It says it on the internet. And therefore, it is objectively true.
It's official. There is a record of this.
Thank you, sir.
Yes. Oh, man. So, okay. So, you know what worked well for you. You know mm-hmm. what you're going back to the board for. Or you know what you're going back to work on. And what's the future look like for this? Are you going to engage in more MMA fights? Was this a one-time thing? Was this something, hey, I want to go out and prove to myself I can do it? Or is mm-hmm. this something like, hey, maybe I'm looking to do some more amateur work? Maybe move into pro. I don't know. Yeah. What are you looking?
I really fell in love with striking. I feel like the only reason I did jiu-jitsu when I was like 18 or so is because I could kind of talk my parents into thinking that this isn't crazy. Little did they know, right, that I would be sparring with Josh Hoda 5 days a week for 8 years. But I really fell in love with the striking. It's honestly easier. A lot of people aren't going to like that I said that, but it's just not as tough as having somebody drown you with their entire body weight for 2 hours. It's not the same thing. I don't even remember the question, Ray. I'm so sorry.
I just wondered, what's the future?
Yeah. I think if I went in there and I got absolutely mollywopped, I wouldn't really want to do it again. And I think if I went in there and just sparked the dude in my first fight, 30 seconds, I probably wouldn't want to do it again. But I saw a lot that I needed to work on. I love MMA as a fan and as like a student. So just through the process that I kind of talked about earlier of kind of building an avatar that represents you, a game that represents you. I feel like by the time that I change up the current template and put something more or less brand new all together, I'll have the itch again. But it's taxing. It takes a lot from, not necessarily me, it's just very selfish. And you have to think selfishly. You have to think selfishly for however long that you're thinking about fighting some other guy who's training to fight you. So through the canceled match and this one, it's been 5 months of me just thinking of this guy Yazin every night before I get to bed. And that's weird. I don't want to have to be thinking about other men when I'm going to sleep, you know? So I might take a little hiatus. There's another of that particular promotion, Hendo's Fight Night, in February. Hoda was talking about, because he got a little jealous of my shine, I think, on Saturday. Oh, man. So Josh Hoda might make a return, you know, to steal my clout.
It would be good to see the Hoda return.
Oh my gosh, dude. The butt whoopings that he puts on me, I can't wait to see somebody else have to suffer through that. A real somebody just game enough, you know, to kind of withhold the onslaught, but get drowned. I can't wait to see that.
Like, you talk about like the brutality of rolling with someone, mm-hmm. and like every time I roll with that guy, like he could be 10, 12 rounds deep, mm-hmm. and you engage with him and you can tell he's a little tired. But he's not going to get tired.
Imagine not being able to like pull guard on that guy. And he's throwing punches at you. And you have to stand up. Stay there. Fire back. And not get taken down at the same time. It's a nightmare to deal with that guy. He absolutely mauled me. I want to say like 4 days out from my fight. And I wanted to cry. I went up to Jake and I was like, dude, what am I doing? What's going on here? He's like, don't worry about it, bro. Hoda's an asshole. That's what he said, essentially. I was like, all right, you're right, you're right, you're right.
Dude, I saw that. Yeah. I saw it. And I stopped. I was rolling and I stopped and I looked over and I was like, what is going on over there? Yeah. And I heard him talking smack to you too. Like when he's like, come on, keep going, get up.
Yeah, that's him coaching. Yeah. That's coaching.
Oh, I guess it's in the spectrum of coaching.
Yeah. I stand up and then he would take me immediately back down.
Yeah.
Get up. I'm trying, God. You know?
Yeah. You got to love Hoda. Hey, you know, though, when we talk about training, though, you know, in over there where I lift on the mirror, every day I look at it, like when I'm finishing up that last set and I'm always right there in front of the mirror and it's like right there in front of me, it says, your competition is still training and I got to keep going. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing. Every time I feel tired in there, I just remember my competition is still training. Not that I'm a competitor or anything. Not like
no, you. But you
not
are
like Hoda.
Everyone is, you know, in a different way.
And dude, so you went out there, you put it on the line, you represented yourself, represented the gym, represented your training partners, and you came out on top. So how did it feel? How was the ride home?
It felt good. I went to the bar. I did not go home. I don't know if we could say that on the show, but I had a few pops pretty much immediately. I had a friend who was fighting out of the same corner as I was, being the co-main event of that evening. So I got to warm up with him. His coaches are the coaches that I learned a lot from in Riverside that I referenced earlier. So we had kind of like a extended family team there for me personally, me and Ciara, who I met at that gym. So we all are kind of tight. He was the co-main event. Watching him fight kind of took my buzz all the way down from my win because of just the anxiety of not knowing what was going to happen. It was terrible. It was one of the worst. I yelled for him. I was jumping up and down, way more extreme emotions than I had when I was fighting. So, and then after that, both teams kind of got together, hung out for a little bit. Our guys kind of went home, and then we went to the bar to have some pops.
very well then.
Yeah, yes, sir.
Sounds like
everything was fine.
An excellent time.
Nothing bad happened at all.
A little bit of ibuprofen and some water.
Yeah.
With sugar.
Mm-hmm. Fire water.
So it was a good night. You came out on top. Hey, I can tell you, everyone at the gym, super proud of you. Dude, and you know, hey, we're all super happy that you won, but we'd have been proud of you anyway. I mean, you're one of us. You've been part of us. I know you train about in San Jose and all these other places. And, you know, I feel like I'm being cheated on some nights by you and all that. But, you know, hey, I still love you. And you're still one of us. Because you know what? You're the one that brought me in.
Yeah, Ray.
Yeah.
Remind the people.
Remind the people.
Tell them who was there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. From day one.
Before there was a Ryan, before even Sunshine Ray, there was Kids Class Chance.
That's right.
And Taylor. And Taylor's dead. So I'm all that's left.
All that's left.
I had to go out there and fist fight somebody because Ryan took my spot at the head of the table as far as favorite jiu-jitsu player that Jake has. So I had to just, you know, reassert myself as the favorite.
Now the tables are turning.
Yep.
That's right.
Yep. Remember I told you, Ryan, when I came back, it was going to be different.
And different it has become.
Jeez Louise.
You have anything else you want to add before we wrap this up, brother?
Just a few thank yous, if that's okay. Thank you to my lovely wife, Sierra. She had to put up with so much in the last few months dealing with this. And now it's time that I put my ego away and we work on the wedding and getting that set up and kind of that being the focus of the next few months. Huge thank you to Javon and RJ over at Excel for inviting me in to train, beating up Hoda in front of me. That really felt good. And the guys over at 760 Jiu-Jitsu who helped spar with me for this camp. I couldn't have done it without all of these people that really don't know me being so like kind and welcoming. And of course, you know, Jake. Yeah, we'll skip over that. Andrew Saucedo for being in the corner. Thank you, guys.
Good old Jake Mopez.
Yep, Jake Mopez. They said North County Jiu-Jitsu. I don't know if you know that.
I heard North County
Jiu-Jitsu. If you would like, rewatch the fight to that moment to see the look that I give. I'm not looking at my opponent or the announcer at all during the introductions. They said that I was 5'8", and they said North County Jiu-Jitsu back to back, and I had the smuggest look on my face, and I know Jake was really, really feeling it at that moment. It was
you got to represent.
Of course, I tried.
Well, Chance, I appreciate you spending your afternoon coming over here and talking with me about a little bit of MMA, a little bit of jiu-jitsu, and your mindset and how you prepped going into this match. We're all super proud of you, and thank you for representing the gym. Thank you for representing what we do and representing everybody you trained with. You did great. Absolutely love you, brother. Thank you. And I will see you on the mats.
Yeah.
BJJ Mat Times.